From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 15th day of March, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana. Land-Grant University Extension Agricultural Economist Frayne Olson will join us from NDSU in Fargo, North Dakota. And we'll hear all about the agricultural energies today from Dave Chatterton at Strategic Farm Marketing from right here in Champaign County on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Medium. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, May corn today settled at $7.58. That was up 9 3/4. July at 7.23 1/4, 4 3/4 higher. And new crop December down 1 1/4 at $6.51 1/4. May beans at $16.58 3/4. Down 11 3/4. November down 14 at $14.67. Bean meal futures at $484.30 lower. The bean oil at $73.68, down 27 cents. Wheat futures soft red up 58 at $11.54 1/4. That in the May, the July harvest month at 11.27 1/2, up 57 1/2 cents. And hard red wheat up 57 1/2 at 11.57 1/2. Live cattle futures at $136.80, $1.10 higher. Feeders were down 15 cents at $167.30. Lean hogs at $120.07 1/2, up 72 1/2 cents. Crude oil at $96.71 a barrel, down $6.30. The wholesale price of gasoline on the RBOB 15 7/10 lower. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana now joins us. Thanks, Wayne, for being with us. Kind of an all-over-the-board day, I guess, in Chicago.
Yeah, what a pleasure to be here, Todd. You are correct. It's been just crazy. When we walked in this morning, corn got down as low as 36, and we were trading about in the 40s by the time at 8 or 7 o'clock your time this morning. But here we are. We're at 7.58 now, a dime higher than that as we went on through the day. The new crop continues to stay down a couple cents. We were down like 25, 27 in the beans, and now we're only down about 13 going into the close that way. And wheat was the strong one all day today. The COVID and the Chinese closing a couple of their ports because of COVID, and the interest rates coming up tomorrow was sort of a negative factor as we started the day here that way. We had the talks coming along the way with Ukraine and Russia, and then we sort of went back up when they said things weren't going very well.
So kind of a risk off day, but with really good support. Is that the way you describe it?
And basically it's a risk off day. We've seen a lot of stuff. Crude's fallen. It's going just down over $35 over the last few days, or 27%. We are getting down around key support around 88 to 92. And we look for things to maybe stabilize down in there. But a lot of the exporters or importers don't like to buy or price or purchase on an up day. And we'd seen was up days here for a long time. So I think we saw a little importer pricing come in at the lows this morning and do a little bit of pricing along the way that way, because a lot of countries are needing things. And, you know, that's a really big deal right now in what's going on with Russia and some of the countries that buy 50 to 80% of their exports out of that country, like the wheat and everything. And are they going to continue to buy some, and what's going on that way in the world market?
At the end of the month, the United States Department of Agriculture will release the Prospective Plantings Report. It's a survey of farmers, literally a survey of some 85,000 farmers, I think, across the whole of the U.S. They'll be tallying up what producers think they want to plant in the way of corn, soybeans, and wheat. Most will add the corn and soybean numbers up and get about 180 million total. Do you think that'll be the case this year?
I think it probably will. We will look at the beef house there, Todd, and we saw just pretty much everybody was going to stay what they were. A few people said a few more acres of corn, and a few said a few more acres of beans, but nobody said any great big changes to what they're anticipating, what their crop rotation has been. We did some seed corn meetings with three or four seed corn companies, and the same sort of results. We just had a lot bigger numbers in one area when we did it at the beef house. So Unless we see some real changes in the Western Corn Belt, it seems like the Eastern Corn Belt is going to pretty well try to stick with the rotation.
Indeed. Hey, thank you. We appreciate you being with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. You're listening to the Closing Market Report on WILLAG.org from Illinois Public Media. That's willag.org online as well. We're now joined by Frayne Olson, agricultural economist at NDSU for North Dakota State University Extension. Thank you, Frayne, for being with us again this month. I appreciate that a lot. Can we start, and I think because of our conversations, the same thing is happening there that is happening here, which is that for the elevators, they're putting old crop bids on months that are further out. Can you explain why that is the case?
Yeah, so a lot of the, I know up here, again, a lot of the elevators for corn, soybeans, and wheat have rolled their nearby, their current pricing into the July futures month. And usually at this time of year, we're using the May futures as that pricing point for immediate delivery, but they've rolled to the July contract. And there's a couple of reasons for it. Obviously, the elevators are hedgers, right? When they're buying grain from you or they're pricing product, they're looking at that relationship between the futures market and the cash market. Well, we started to see a lot more speculative activity in those front months, the May month in particular. Some of that is, you know, the managed hedge funds, those guys that cause a lot of volatility in the marketplace. We're also getting some interest in the index funds. So an index fund is usually made up of some kind of a blend of commodities. It's a portfolio of commodities, and they're usually very heavily weighted towards the energy complex, like crude oil, natural gas, RBOB, which is the refined fuels. But they also have the grains as well as the meat products or the livestock sector. Well, if you're a trader that's used to working in the stock market or the bond market or other financial instruments, and you see all of these things happening in crude oil, but you're not familiar with trading crude oil directly, these commodity index funds become a really nice alternative. They're kind of a lower risk way to participate in the price movements. So they're really going after this price rally in the energy sector. But as a result, there becomes some more demand, buying interest also in the grains. So we're seeing the nearby months, like the May contract, have a lot more price volatility than we normally see that's not being followed in the cash market. So the cash market and the futures are starting to separate a little bit. So we're getting a lot of volatility in the May contract. We're seeing some price movement up and down in the cash market, which then adds some risk if you're hedging. So what is happening is the elevators and our processors are using the July month moving further forward in time because those July contracts aren't quite as volatile. And then they're adjusting the basis so that the cash market essentially is the same. So most farmers are saying, well, why did they suddenly switch? You know, is there something going on or, what's happening? And it's really a risk management strategy based off of the elevators and the risk exposure for the processors. They're trying to find a bit more of a stable market that better reflects what happens in the cash market as well as the futures.
Now, speaking of switches, producers in particular in the northwestern part of the Corn Belt, I would think, probably are considering their options as it's related to acreage. Be interesting to see whether USDA is able to pick all of those up at this late date, because I'm going to guess that changes are still being made in the minds of many producers in your part of the world. What are they telling you?
Yeah, and we are starting to see some of the kind of the tone shift. Before the Ukraine-Russia war started, spring wheat in particular was kind of you could make money, the profit margins were there, but it wasn't nearly as strong as a lot of the other crops, including corn. Now, again, North Dakota being one of those kind of transition areas where if corn prices are high enough, we can increase our corn acreage. If it isn't high enough, we can contract and switch to other crops. So what we're seeing before was corn was kind of dominating, even with the higher fertilizer prices, at least in the eastern portion of the state, corn was dominating. In the western portion of the state, where yields are a little bit lower, we also have some very dry soil conditions in the central and western part of the state. There's a little more hesitancy for corn versus wheat. It's a little tougher call. But now with the strong rally we've had in the wheat market, the wheat complex, including spring wheat, suddenly the spring wheat and the profit margins are very competitive with most of the other crops. So I do think in that transition zone, as we get into kind of the central portion of the state, I think spring wheat now will start to add some acres. We might see a little bit of a contraction in planting intentions away from corn and towards spring wheat. But if you get into the eastern portion, or especially in the southeast portion of the state, corn still dominates from a budgeting standpoint. So I don't expect to see a lot of shifting in the east. But as we get to the central and west, I do think we'll see a little bit fewer corn acres and a rebound in the expectations for spring wheat. As we talked about earlier, whether that is reflected in the USDA planting intentions report, we'll kind of have to wait to see. Some of this changing of acres may be occurring a little bit later. It may not be completely picked up in that report.
I'm wondering, have you been thinking about what the national numbers look like for corn and soybeans, and do you have some acreage estimates?
Well, I know when we had the outlook for them, they came in at about, if I remember correctly, about 88 million acres for soybeans, and about I believe it was 92-ish for corn. When those first came out, I thought, well, maybe that soybean number seemed a little low. I was thinking maybe we'd see a little higher soybean number, a little bit lower corn number. But now again, with the shifts we've seen most recently after the Ukraine-Russia war and the fact that corn prices have rallied, I think right now soybeans are trying to keep pace with what's going on in the corn market. So I'm looking at numbers very similar to what I think the outlook form is suggesting. I do think we'll see a slight slippage in corn. Some of that corn on corn acres may not be as attractive as they were before. The soybean acres, I think, will increase. The big issue, I think, in my mind will be, what about those double crop wheat soybean acres that are in, for example, southern Illinois or into Missouri? Are we going to get those acres or not? Spring wheat, soft red winter wheat acres were up a little bit. Will those go back into second crop soybeans? I do think they will. Again, what's the yield potential is always the big issue.
So USDA at around 180 million acres total, that's pretty typical, though there can be, 1 to 4 million extra acres that sort of come in that corn to soybean complex. You don't see those being in play this year?
Well, so where do those acres come into and out of? Part of them is actually prevented plant. I know up in my area, that's one of the big issues we always have to struggle with is, we can have even in the state of North Dakota, a couple million acre swing and prevent plant acres from one year to the next. Now, last year we had pretty dry conditions coming into spring's work. We had pretty much every acre planted in the state. I do expect very similar numbers here. We don't have big prevent plant acres, around nationally. There weren't any big pockets where we could absorb some or come up with some new acres. The other thing, again, in my area, we have a lot of the smaller market crops that come in. We raise a very wide range of crops. Individually, they're pretty small, but collectively, they make up quite a few acres. And I do think, given the higher prices right now, when I look at the bottom line budgets, they're very competitive. And nationally, you look at cotton prices. Cotton acreage is expected to be up slightly from last year. I think that's very legitimate. Sorghum acres also tend to follow the corn market pretty, sorghum prices tend to follow corn very closely. As corn prices have come up, it becomes a rotation issue and kind of relative profitability of sorghum versus corn, and especially as you get into central and western Kansas. So I really don't see a big total shift. I mean, the balance between corn and soybeans, we can argue about that, but to actually pull in a whole bunch of new acres in corn or soybeans away from something else, it's going to be tough because these other crops are being very competitive in their pricing, at least for new crop contracts that are available.
Hey, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
No, always a pleasure to visit.
That's Frey Nolson. He is with NDSU Extension, that's North Dakota State University Extension, in Fargo. One point of clarification, as he was talking about the prevented plant acres related to corn and soybeans, USDA does put prevent plant acres into their prospective plantings report at the this upcoming end of the month, I think at about 2 million, but they don't really say. That just gives them some flex. So there can be 2 million acres that show up arbitrarily in June, and there can be more than that that disappear in June as well. Dave Chatterton is now here from Strategic Farm Marketing. Dave, thank you for being with us today. Oh, and thank you for coming over to the Spring Outlook last Tuesday at the Beef House. We had a great day there. I really hope you enjoyed that.
Yeah, Todd, a great turnout, great event to be out with everybody again and kind of starting these meetings in person. I think everybody is appreciative of the work that WIL does in that regard, and you know, good to see everybody from the farm doc team to the other analysts, to all the producers that came, and you know, certainly thank them for their time.
And then just as a reminder, and you folks there at Strategic Farm Marketing probably are busy today. This is the last day folks have to sign up for crop insurance.
Yeah, so the federal deadline today, March 15th, if you haven't done that already, be sure that you do that. Also, keep in mind a couple other things real quick. Today would also be the deadline for your ARC PLC election at the FSA office. That has a play into crop insurance. If you use SCO, you need to make sure that you're signed up for PLC, not ARC. And it's also the last day to certify cover crops here, which also give you a $5 discount on your crop insurance, or a potential $5 discount on your crop insurance. So if you have those cover crops out, make sure that they're certified at the FSA in that regard.
Now let's turn our attention to the agricultural energies. Can we start with the price of crude oil? It spiked and appears to have at least topped for the time being. Can you tell me what's happened there? Because it's been a pretty good ride. And also how that relates to the price of other commodities like corn.
Yeah, Todd, it's been a very volatile market, actually record-breaking, you know, in terms of volatility, and been on a very good yo-yo, and that, you know, goes back directly to what's happened between Russia and Ukraine. I mean, crude oil prices had already started to ratchet up in terms of the inflation play and just general interest and supply-demand fundamentals, but the Russian-Ukraine situation or conflict has taken that to a whole new role here. And if you look at where we were at in terms of price, right before that event got started in late February, we were around $92 in crude. We spiked all the way up to over $130. And this morning, as you and I talk, we're down pretty sharply here, but we're still right at $98. So it's been a pretty wild ride there. That's a $35 plus, you know, swing here, you know, high to low just in the last week or so. So volatility is definitely present in the market. We've seen diesel fuel move over $1.30 in one day last week, you know, settled 90 cents higher in futures. So that has an implication, of course, as you said, for a number of different commodities, including where we're at with corn oil, the vegetable oil play that's in there, and just the general economic and logistical flow of commodities around the world. So nothing particularly bearish about what's happened in terms of that situation, but we have seen the market back off just a little bit in terms of you know, where we're at from a pricing standpoint. That comes as Russia has backed an Iranian, you know, the resumption of the Iranian exports, as well as saying that, you know, we found that they've been able to continue to export from their Black Sea ports while this is going on.
Yeah, so I do want to talk a bit more about that relationship. You said not particularly bearish, but the bump up in crude probably brought the rest of the commodities up. Do you see a pretty good support level for corn, soybeans, and wheat? And at what area do you think that takes place?
Yeah, so definitely some cross currents going there. I mean, if you track the corn oil or the corn correlation to crude, as well as the bean oil correlation to either diesel fuel or the oil products, it's been pretty impressive here, and we've seen definitely a push-pull relationship. If you look at the commodity, you know, complex as a whole, between the grains and the oils, they've gotten the majority of the dollars that have been flowing in on that speculative side of the market. When you put that in terms of price targets for where we're at and looking at support, you know, in terms of the March contract right now, we're still up, you know, fairly close to the highs here. We've fallen off some, but we've got good support here, probably right in that 729, 730 area versus a 757 print today. if you put that in terms of the beans. And, you know, the May print today is 1662, as we're talking about right now. The support there is in the low 1605 to 1613. And I suspect that the market is going to continue to be pretty volatile, but maybe consolidate a little bit from where we've been the last couple of weeks here as we wait to see what the Fed will say later this week, as well as, you know, how things continue to progress in the Black Sea.
It's been an awful volatile market. Have you thought about what new crop looks like going through May, July, maybe even the March acreage setting month? I just can't imagine how this is all going to play out.
Yeah, the step back that we've had here of late, we've had a big inverse in the markets, and of course we've eaten into the old crop contracts more than the new crop. The new crops remain, relatively speaking, within earshot of what the contract high is. So in terms of corn, I mean, we made a new high in the DC yesterday. We quickly reversed, but that was 658 versus a 652 print here this morning. And in beans, you know, we had a very quick spike high back on the 23rd, but the recent high here has been up around 1504, and we're at 1470. So definitely within, you know, staying within range of that, Todd. And I think that's because there will be a lot of pressure on the U.S. here to have, you know, a big acreage base as well as a trend or above yield crop this summer. If you combine the effects of the loss of, let's say, 20 million metric tons of production in soybeans and maybe half of that in corn in South America, as well as now the supply disruption that we're having in the Black Sea with wheat, with corn, with sun oil, with some of the other, you know, products, the pressure is going to be on here. So I doubt that there's a lot of, you know, traction on the downside here until we can, A, get through the March report and see what that acreage number from the government looks like, B, start playing the crop and have an idea that it's going to go in a timely basis without a lot of problems, and C, kind of get it off to a good start where we can imply some kind of a yield, forecast to that. So could be a long tail as far as the support from what's going on globally here happens in our marketplace for the new crop contracts this spring.
And before I let you go, are there things that producers should consider related to their energy needs for this year, whether it's spring diesel fuel, fall diesel, drying needs, those sorts of things?
Yeah, I think for right now, we're not a big, there is an inverse in the fuel market right now. It's not necessarily reflected as much in the cash marketplace as what we find in the futures contracts. So we're staying away from the fall contracting for now. If the market continues to drop, that would be a different story. I think for spring, if you look at the situation of where we've taken a big correction here of late, and as we talk today, diesel fuel's down over 20 cents right now, just today, I think it's a good spot to step in and probably, you know, top off your tanks or get that extra load or two. What you're talking about. And these diesel prices have been, you know, we've been over $5 on the retail level for diesel. We've been over $4.70, $4.75 on red diesel here. So that's a transport on the farm that's going to cost you around $42,000. It's not something to ignore any longer. It's a big cost. And so when we can shave a dollar or more off of that from that recent high, I think it's time to be, you know, to be looking at that and paying attention. Fundamentally, we still have some pretty good challenges to build oil supply in the global sense, you know, with a war going on here and supply disruption around the world.
Hey, thank you.
Thanks, Todd.
It's Dave Chatterton. He is with Strategic Farm Marketing. Joined us here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.